ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. It's Friday, the 5th of April. I'm Rachel Mealy, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people. Today, weather warnings for eastern Australia. New South Wales braces for gale force winds and dangerous flooding. And an elusive desert species has finally been spotted in the wild, highlighting how many of our native animals are still unknown to many of us. First today, the Australian government has been briefed on Israel's investigation into the deaths of seven foreign aid workers, including Australian Zomi Frankum, in Gaza. Several nations are demanding transparency around the incident in which an Israeli airstrike hit an aid convoy. The United States has gone further than ever before, telling Israel if it wants its continued support in its war against Hamas, it must take steps to address civilian harm and ensure the safety of aid workers. Rima Chia reports.
Israel says it will publicly release its findings into an airstrike that struck a World Central Kitchen aid convoy. It killed seven aid workers in what the aid organisation described as a deconflicted zone in Gaza. The ABC understands the Australian government has been briefed on Israel's independent investigation following its demand for answers into the death of Australian Zomi Frankum. Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner is a spokesperson for the Israeli Defence Force.
It was a very grave mistake. We are indeed sorry, and we will get to the bottom of it, what happened. The independent investigation has been already presented to the ambassadors of the relevant nations, and we will be presenting them to the World Central Kitchen, I expect, tomorrow morning, and then we'll be bringing them to the public as well.
However, the Foreign Affairs Minister's Office says it was still awaiting a full and transparent report, as multiple members of the Australian government had called for, including Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. As for how independent it actually is, Peter Lerner says the investigators were outside of the IDF.
When I say independent, it's independent of the chain of command, which means the people that are leading it are former senior officers of the IDF. They are completely independent of the system, but they have full access to all of the information, the operational details, the operational plans, the laws, the rules of engagement for specific missions, the intelligence, what we knew, what we didn't know, and so on.
The Australian government will now talk to other affected countries to ensure it can have confidence in Israel's independence and the outcomes of the findings. US President Joe Biden has also warned Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that future US support for the Gaza war depends on Israel's ability to protect civilians and aid workers. In a phone call between the two leaders, National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says the president wants tangible change.
He made clear that US policy with respect to Gaza will be determined by our assessment of Israel's immediate action on these steps. He underscored that an immediate ceasefire is essential to stabilize and improve the humanitarian situation and to protect innocent civilians. And he urged the Prime Minister to empower his negotiators to conclude a deal without delay to bring the hostages home.
Mr. Kirby says the US wants to see concrete steps taken in the coming hours and days, where there's a dramatic increase in humanitarian aid getting in and a reduction in violence. While he didn't specify if military support would be withheld from Israel if they didn't comply, Mr. Kirby says they could face consequences.
I'm not going to preview any potential policy decisions coming forward. What we want to see are some real changes on the Israeli side. You know, if we don't see changes from their side, there'll have to be changes from our side, but I won't preview what that could look like.
Israel has said it will adjust tactics in the war, describing the attack on the aid workers as a result of misidentification. Meanwhile, a team of 600 British legal experts across the political spectrum are pressuring their Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, to stop selling weapons to Israel. Sir Alan Duncan is a former Conservative UK Deputy Foreign Secretary who was aware of the initial sale of weapons and was sceptical at the time. He says technically the UK should reconsider.
I think the scale of death and of starvation and of mayhem in Gaza is so reprehensible that really we should not play any part of it. I mean, think of it. The irony, if we were to continue selling weapons, of doing that and then having to build a pontoon to get aid supplies in from the sea into Gaza, or indeed dropped from the air, because there's a famine created by Israel. So, you know, that would be a self-defeating nonsense, really, and a pretty sick one.
The findings of Israel's investigation are expected to be publicly released tomorrow.
Rima Chia. Eastern Australia is facing a weekend of wild weather with severe warnings for flash flooding, massive rainfall and damaging winds. A flood watch is in place for at least 50 rivers across eastern New South Wales and southern Queensland, with a major flood threat along the Hawkesbury Nepean in western Sydney. Sydney Airport has cancelled flights, some schools across the state have closed, and Sydney's major dams are predicted to spill over in the coming days. Emergency services are asking communities to start planning now ahead of any evacuation orders. Elizabeth Cramsey reports.
Residents to the north, south and west of Sydney are on high alert, with rainfall expected to cause dangerous and life-threatening flash flooding tonight and tomorrow. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns has a clear message.
This is a significant weather event. It's very important that everyone in New South Wales listens to the latest broadcast for updated warnings, particularly in your local region. If you live in a flood-prone community, download the Hazards Near Me app, understand what the risks are in your local community. It's most important that you don't take unnecessary risks at the moment, particularly travelling through floodwaters.
The east of New South Wales is bracing for a major rain event, with severe weather warnings for intense rain and wind in place up and down the coast. Nine schools are closed across the state and Sydney's airport had to delay or cancel a bulk of flights. Stephen Birkinsoni is from the Bureau of Meteorology.
During today, we've updated the severe weather warning for areas of the coast from Newcastle down to the south coast towards Bega, and inland in an arc, capturing towns like Putty and Oberon, Goulburn and other towns in amongst that area.
He says the focus is mainly on today and Saturday, with the system expected to move out to the Tasman Sea on Sunday. But until then, there's potential for big rain totals.
We're expecting 6 hourly rainfalls of 50 to 90 millimetres, with 130 millimetres over the Illawarra Escarpment quite possible. 24-hour totals of 200 to 300 millimetres are also possible in some locations.
While there hasn't been much of a riverine response yet, that's the focus over the next 2 days. There's concern Sydney's Warragamba Dam could spill on Monday morning as catchments fill. And if there is a response, authorities are ready. Here's New South Wales SES Commissioner Carlene York.
We've pre-positioned our resources, our vessels, our high clearance vehicles and our aviation assets to make sure that we can help all those communities that may be affected by these forecasted rains and storms.
She's asking residents to stay indoors, avoid making unnecessary journeys and start preparing now.
So for those communities that do get affected by flash flooding and possible flood waters, please be prepared, listen to the SES, and make sure that you prepare your house, you've cleaned out your gutters, you're tying down equipment. The SES are quite busy out there. We've had 550 calls until 6 a.m. in the last 24 hours with 7 flood rescues.
And to follow any evacuation directions.
I often say to the communities it's better that if we ask you to evacuate that you go and come back and find that your house is fine and it's dry. What we don't want is the roads to be clogged, the evacuation routes to be clogged, and it's really important that people take that action as early as possible.
Further north in Queensland, showers and thunderstorms are expected for much of today and tomorrow. Here's meteorologist Phelim Hanafy.
Could see a risk of some localised moderate falls with that activity still, perhaps particularly areas just to the south of Brisbane and around the Gold Coast. But that's a watch point. In fact, probably models have backed off a little on the heavy falls risk around the southeast during today and tomorrow, but that risk does remain because they do show the coastal trough kind of holding off just offshore, but then coming a little bit onshore during Sunday.
Meteorologist Phelim Hanafy ending that report from Elizabeth Cramsey. Oil prices have hit their highest level since October amid escalating tensions in the Middle East. The price of Brent crude, which determines what Australian motorists pay at the pump, rose 1.6% this morning to over $90 a barrel. Business reporter David Taylor joined me a short time ago to talk about what this means for Australian consumers. David, how significant is the spike in the oil price?
Look, it's significant, Rachel. We shouldn't focus too much on the volatility in the market, but this is noteworthy. The price of Brent crude rose 1.6% this morning to over $90 a barrel. Meanwhile, West Texas Intermediate Futures, which is another measure of oil prices and where they're going, rose $1.16 or 1.4% to $86.59 a barrel. Now, both contracts, Rachel, are at their highest level since October. So this has been a steady increase in the price of oil. And the question is, well, obviously, how much higher can it go? Now, oil rose on Thursday, that's our time overnight, following reports that Israeli embassies across the US have been placed on high alert due to increasing threats of an Iranian attack on Israeli diplomats. Now, it's important, again, to note that that is what the news is reporting. It isn't necessarily what traders are reacting to, but certainly that's what international wires are telling us at this point.
So what does the increase in these products mean for Australian motorists?
The price of oil hasn't been hugely influenced by the conflict in the Middle East, largely because other big players in the Middle East, other big countries which are big oil producers, haven't been drawn in. Now, if there is any kind of suggestion that Iran will be drawn into the conflict in any meaningful way, that's a problem because Iran is the third largest producer in OPEC. So any suggestion that the oil supply across the world may be affected is noteworthy. The ANZ Bank has increased its short-term price target on the price of oil to $95 a barrel on the back of more positive economic developments in the US, but combined with ongoing supply tightness and rising geopolitical risks. So if that then turns into a sustained higher oil price, Rachel, that flows through to motorists around the country in Australia with about a four-week time lag. And it's generally considered that a $1 increase in the international price of oil leads to a 10 cent per litre rise at the bowser.
And David, if fuel prices rise, what implications does that hold for inflation and interest rates here?
Well, it could potentially, Rachel, cause a headache for the Reserve Bank. We know that it's been effective in bringing down aggregate demand in the economy, slowing down activity. The other side of the equation is the supply side of inflation. So we're talking rents, we're talking insurance premiums, healthcare costs, things like that. Now, petrol is also part of that. So if there's continuing upward pressure in the price of petrol based on international tensions, geopolitical risks, and that forcing up the price of oil, that'll flow through to the price of petrol and, of course, put upwards pressure on inflation. And you don't need me to tell you, Rachel, that that, of course, has implications for interest rates. And the Reserve Bank is trying to navigate that effectively. It's called it a narrow path. But yes, higher oil price leads to higher petrol prices potentially, and then, of course, puts upwards pressure on interest rates.
David Taylor. On ABC Radio across Australia, this is The World Today. Thanks for your company. The insurance giant IAG has been forced to pay 19,000 current and former workers more than $21 million in back pay after an intervention by the Fair Work Ombudsman. The company is the latest Australian corporate to be outed over worker underpayments in recent years, and in addition to back paying staff, it will also fork out a $650,000 contrition payment. The ABC's senior business correspondent Peter Ryan is covering the story. We spoke earlier. Peter, how did IAG manage to underpay so many staff given the other examples of underpayments in recent years?
Well, Rachel, IAG is best known for the big insurance brands NRMA, RACV, CGU, to name a few. But yes, it's now one of several Australian corporates to have found to have underpaid staff, joining the likes of Woolworths, Coles, Qantas, the Commonwealth Bank, even here at the ABC. The Fair Work Ombudsman says IAG self-reported the underpayments in December 2020 after an internal review. Now, IAG has signed an enforceable undertaking and will make a $650,000 contrition payment, and that goes into the Commonwealth's Consolidated Revenue Fund. The Fair Work Ombudsman puts this down to basic shortcomings, not having the right time and attendance systems in place, which meant employees were not paid for their actual hours of work, overtime, weekends, public holidays, shift work. The average back payment is just over $1,000. 14 workers were back paid $200,000. Also, $16 million in long service leave entitlements will be back paid. I spoke with the Fair Work Ombudsman, Anna Booth, who says this isn't just about money, but whether workers are valued, representing a cultural problem at companies like IAG.
The sad thing is that it is often the lower paid workers that miss out when underpayments are discovered, which is a double whammy, because they're already struggling to pay their bills and they're struggling even more when they don't get what they're legally entitled to. The kind of people that we talk to, who are actually, I must say, always fabulous when you call them for a renewal of your insurance or something like that. And it's really a tragedy to know that they were being underpaid.
When companies like IAG take their eye off the ball in paying workers properly, what's this telling the workers about how they're valued?
I think what's really important about underpayments like this is it's not just about the money. It is about the money, but it's not just about the money. It's also about what it says to the worker about their worth. And we all know that, you know, our jobs and how people see us in the workplace is a very big part of our identity and our self-esteem. And I think when workers are underpaid, it's a real message to them that they're not valued.
Fair Work Ombudsman Anna Booth with Peter Ryan. And Peter, how has IAG responded to the underpayments and that $650,000 contrition payment?
Well, Rachel, IAG has issued a statement apologising to current and former employees who were underpaid through what it calls errors, says it's introduced new controls and payroll processes and invested in new time and attendance systems to prevent this from happening again.
Peter Ryan. This weekend, the clocks will go back an hour in several states as daylight savings comes to an end. For many, it means an hour of lost sleep on Sunday, but the sun going down earlier can make a big difference for female runners who don't feel safe going for a jog in the dark. Angus Randall reports.
Brittany de Groot took up running during the depths of Melbourne's COVID lockdowns.
Running for me is just like a time where I can just sort of be with my own thoughts a little bit and sort of like just disconnect from all the stresses of life.
Disconnecting is the goal, but she says it's impossible to completely switch off as a female runner.
It is nice to get in your own head, but there's always those moments where something pulls you out of it, whether it's someone beeping at you or yelling at you. You always feel like you're looking over your shoulder if someone's following too closely behind you.
2 years ago, Brittany de Groot founded Flow State, an all-female run club which holds weekly evening social runs in Melbourne. And with the days getting shorter, plus the end of daylight savings, she says women aiming to stay fit through the winter months are seeking safety in numbers.
In winter, I think that safety in numbers thing becomes really apparent. It doesn't stop the harassment completely, but it is, I guess, another little layer that gives women a chance to sort of, I guess, feel slightly more comfortable and feel like there's a level of camaraderie. I think that that's like an inherent topic of conversation is like, why do we have to do this?
Do you think men understand this?
No. Short answer. I don't think so. I think that it's hard to empathise with something that you just really have never experienced.
It's a sentiment echoed by Associate Professor Mary Iliades. She's the co-convener of the Deakin Network Against Gendered Violence.
Men are not recognising their privilege when it comes to occupying not only a public space, but any space for that matter. There are many instances where We see that men might run past a woman on a footpath, and this can actually frighten somebody if it is very dark, if it's very quiet, if the area is not well lit. So there are things that men can also do to help to ensure that women are feeling that little bit safer when they are out in the dark.
She says all too often the responsibility is being put back onto women.
We are still seeing a real systemic problem of encouraging women to protect and police themselves by telling them what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. So, for example, women are often encouraged to protect themselves when running in public by being told to not wear headphones, to not run in the dark in unfamiliar places or even unaccompanied.
Dr. Mary Iliades says there are steps that can be taken now to encourage women to put on their running shoes.
The design of public spaces is usually designed and built by men and for men's purpose. So this has serious consequences for the ways in which women are occupying those spaces. We need to bear in mind that the ways in which pathways might be lit or not lit actually impacts whether or not a woman makes a decision to utilise that space for running, particularly when women are having to run during the early hours of the morning or late in the evening when it is quite dark.
Daylight savings ends in Victoria, New South Wales, the ACT, Tasmania and South Australia on Sunday morning.
Angus Randall. It's small, blind and hairy and is rarely seen by humans. But this week, photographs have captured an elusive species of desert mole up close, generating much excitement in the remote communities of northern Western Australia. The tiny marsupials look something like out of a sci-fi movie, and the rare sighting by Indigenous rangers have highlighted how little-known desert species are in Australia. Regional Affairs reporter Erin Park with this story from Broome.
It looks like something created by a movie special effects department. The small, silky-haired Gagaradul, which lives largely underground and is rarely captured on camera. So desert wildlife expert Gareth Catt was shocked to see a clear, close-up photo of the animal taken by Indigenous rangers in northern Western Australia this week.
Marsupial moles are a little-known creature that lives right across the deserts of Australia. They're a beautiful golden colour. They've got really strong forearms and they burrow through the sand, almost swimming through the sand. But they're incredibly cryptic. They're very hard to find. They do live underground. So to see these photos of a beautiful, you know, very healthy-looking mole is really exciting.
The mole was found and photographed by the Kurnawarraji Rangers during fieldwork on Mardu country in the Pilbara region. The animal's rarely seen face, which has no eyes but a big flat nose, is on full display, along with its soft silky fur and large claws. The rangers who made the find are still out of phone range in the desert, but their manager, Zan King, says it was a proud moment.
They were all very, very excited to see this little fella and very keen to get back home to tell their families and to tell the young kids, because we've got lots of junior rangers looking forward to being rangers when they grow up. So, yeah, caused a lot of excitement.
The northern marsupial moles, known in Mardu language as Gagaradul, are only seen on average 5 to 10 times in a decade, due to their tendency to conceal themselves underground and the minimal human presence in the desert areas where they live. The only regular eyes and ears on the ground keeping tabs on them are Aboriginal rangers like Lynette Wilridge.
When we do marsupial mole monitoring or surveys, you know, you look around for mole holes, marsupial mole tracks first.
The Nyunga Mata Ranger is teaching new recruits how to track the reclusive moles, with evidence of their presence photographed and fed into a centralised database.
The whereabouts, the location, put them in our iPad, and then we synchronise it, and that travels all the way to the Perth office. So we're still learning about marsupial moles.
Gareth Catt from the Indigenous Desert Alliance says the situation shows how critical Aboriginal rangers are in monitoring remote wildlife, especially as threats like cats and foreign weeds and climate change reduce their viable habitat.
Well, rainfall and temperature patterns are definitely changing, and those impacts are being felt very strongly in the desert. We're seeing very long heat waves, and some of those animals which are reliant on surface water or reliant on moisture in the food that they're eating to survive, they're definitely under threat.
There is a tendency for research funding and public attention to be focused on so-called charismatic megafauna, animals like koalas and kangaroos. It's something ecologists are hoping will change as creatures like silky moles get the rock star treatment they deserve.
I'm a big fan of all of those little snakes and spiders and creepy crawlies and a whole array of wildlife. And our understanding of that is something that we really need to work on as a nation and not just worry about those big furry things.
Gareth Catt from the Indigenous Desert Alliance, ending that report by Erin Park. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Rachel Mealy.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Israel says it was a mistake, but how does a military manage to bomb a clearly marked aid convoy? Today, a longtime aid worker, Tim Costello, on why no one trying to deliver aid in Gaza is safe and what the world should do about it. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.